All right, I'm going to turn to the Word this morning, and we've been in a very, very short series, a mini-series, just 2 weeks, on Thanksgiving, you know, just leaning into the season and talking about what it is to give thanks. And so that's the name of the series, is simply Give Thanks, Operating in God's Grace. And last week, we looked at that, and we looked at the angle of saying thank you to God, or living out a life of gratitude towards God. And we looked at a passage that said nothing about Thanksgiving. It was about Deuteronomy 8, where God talked about the fact that he had led his people through a pretty tough time in the wilderness and had them on the edge of the promised land. He led them through struggle. They were stepping into abundance. And what we said is, hey, no matter whether we are looking back at struggle or looking forward towards abundance, we have cause to thank the living God, and that we are to remain thankful. We explored what that could look like to live a life of gratitude before God, whether we're looking back at struggle or looking forward to abundance. So if you want to get the replay on that, that's up on YouTube. But that's where we were last week. So we're talking about our posture towards God, gratitude towards God. Today's going to be different, right? Today's going to be different. We talk about our posture of gratitude towards people, And that's where we're going to be today. We're going to be talking about how to say giant thank yous. How to say giant thank yous. And just to start us out, you'll notice that saying giant thank yous is very much a part of people winning awards. Right? People winning awards. You think about if you've ever watched the Oscars or something like that, or if you've ever watched somebody get inducted into the Hall of Fame for a certain sport, right? Or someone who's won, let's say, the Nobel Peace Prize, and they are giving thank yous. It's funny, they will thank people who make sense, right? They'll thank people who help them out in their careers. You know, a sports star will thank maybe a coach that he or she had. Someone who is an actor or an actress will thank maybe their directors or their producers or maybe their acting coaches or something like that. And on and on and on. There's people who make a lot of sense who are very obviously relevant to the kind of accolades being bestowed upon somebody, the kind of award that they're winning. That makes sense, right? But then they also go in the Wayback Machine. Right, and this is usually where people, I mean, really choke up and tear up the most. Right, you'll see actors and actresses thanking their moms, thanking their dads. Right, you'll see them thanking. You know, somebody will thank a sports star will thank that second grade teacher, who, when you know nobody ever thought that he or she would amount to much of anything, that second grade teacher who said, "You're going to be awesome." Right? Or maybe, you know, as a kid who was not well behaved, and no one could see that all that kid needed was like something really special that maybe the other kids didn't need, right? And there was that teacher in sixth grade, or maybe in high school, who said, "You know what? You're a diamond in the rough. We just need to like get some dirt off of you and spiff you up a bit, and you're all right," right? And this person will reach back in the Wayback Machine, and will thank that person. Why? Why thank people who seem to have nothing to do with the award, who seem to have nothing to do with the endeavor that you've embarked upon, who seem to have very little to do directly with the success, right? And of course, the reason why is they're reaching in the Wayback Machine because they kind of penetrate the veil a bit, and they say, this person, mom, dad, grandmother, granddad, built me up in such a way that I simply wouldn't be who I am. Sure, they didn't give me the acting classes. Sure, they didn't teach me how to play basketball, right? Sure, they didn't teach me how to do chemistry, and so I won a Nobel Peace Prize. Yeah, mom didn't teach me that, dad didn't teach me that, but my goodness, they taught me all the other building blocks that led up to that. They laid the foundation for me, right? They laid the foundation. Isaac Newton, of course, one of the giants of science, and more specifically physics. He is quoted as saying in a letter to Robert Hooke, who was a competitor of his, who was also a scientist. Isaac Newton said this in the late 17th century. He said, "If I have seen further, it's by standing on the shoulders of giants." Right, and of course he was amazing in the late 17th century. He was proposing all kinds of things that would help us to be able to understand physics and how the world works. Right. And he basically is in an act of humility. He says, look, he says, the only reason I'm able to do that is because I'm standing on the shoulders of other people. There are giants underneath me. And I'm just standing on their shoulders. And everything, all the knowledge I've been able to accumulate is due to what they did, who they were, right? And of course, people have stood on Newton's shoulders. It's been a very long time since Isaac Newton roamed the earth. And there are scientists who've gone far beyond him, but they would look back and they look down and they say, yeah, but I'm just standing on his shoulders, right? This is all gratitude. This is gratitude towards people who've come before us. Last week we talked about gratitude towards God, but also we owe a debt of gratitude towards people, right? Our parents, our moms, our dads, right? Grandmothers, granddads, right? On down the line. It could be your second grade teacher, right, who saw something special in you. It may be a university professor for you. It may be a drill sergeant for some people, right? It could be your next door neighbor who knew that you or maybe you and your family were going through a really rough time, and that person had the insight to just put their arm around you and say, hey, if things ever get really tough, there's milk and cookies at my place. Right? And I'll have you over, right? It could be anybody, right? But we owe a debt of gratitude to God all the time, no matter what season it is. But then also we owe a debt of gratitude towards what I'm calling the giants of life, going off of what Newton said about people who came before him, whose shoulders he stood upon, the giants of life. We owe a serious debt of gratitude towards the giants of life. And you might think that spotting a giant is easy, and sometimes spotting a giant is easy. Sometimes it is as easy as saying, you know, whoa, my mom was awesome. My mom was just here, by the way, so you're going to hear a lot about that kind of thing. She was just in town. Some of you got to meet my mom. But, you know, some of us, it's that easy. It's like, oh, yeah, my mom was amazing. You know, my dad was amazing. You know, my Uncle Nate was amazing, right? For some of us, it's easy. Sometimes spotting a giant is easy, right? It's simple, right? The memory is at the ready. You can draw a direct line from who you are, all the good things in you, right? And many you think good things you've received in that person, right? And that's wonderful, right? Sometimes spotting a giant is easy, right? But in other times, it's trickier, right? Sometimes it's tough to spot a giant because sometimes giants have left us. Sometimes people die and they're not here anymore. And so it may muck around with the memory a little bit, right? For us to be able to recall them or to remember them. They're gone, right? Or maybe it's people who maybe somebody who passed away a very long time ago, or maybe you were young, right? And they don't come to mind as easily. You really got to think about it to figure out the significance they had for your life. They're gone, right? They're more distant. They're removed, right? It could also be this hard to spot a giant because they're underappreciated. People who are underappreciated by us, by others, or us and others. So even if they're alive, there's this kind of static, right, that doesn't allow us to see them very well, right? Sometimes now, here's why it's tough to spot a giant. Because their faults may outshine their virtues. Now that's a tricky one, right? And we'll get back to that later. Their faults, mistakes, character flaws, sometimes very deep character flaws, might outshine their virtues. It could be that their faults really do outweigh their virtues. Maybe if you have like a mental scale, and you're saying, okay, there's good over here, and then there's bad, and yeah, that bad, wowie zowie, right? It could be their faults, at least in your mind, in your memory, really do outweigh their virtues. It also might be spin. Perhaps somebody is more amazing than we think, and the way the truth has been spun is to make them seem actually more dastardly or worse than they actually were. Right? Or it may just be complicated. Sometimes life is just complicated. It's not very black and white. I mean, we tend to try to make simplicity happen, and that's good. But even on the road to simplicity, sometimes things are just messy. It could be that folks have beautiful, vivid virtues and at the same time, right alongside seriously dark, ugly things about them. And we are not quite sure where we come out on them yet. And it may have been years, and you're still trying to figure that out. And that's all right, there's grace for that. There's grace for that. Lastly, it can be tough to spot a giant because we live in a culture that kind of strips the past of virtue because we think we have nothing to learn from it, right? Other than the notion that it's all terrible and we can do better because we know better, right? We regularly look on the past as a source of grievances to make present-day victims, right? Some people even view their own families this way, right? It can be tough to spot a giant, right? But we got two passages before us today that kind of make it easy, that make it really, really super easy for us to spot a giant, to spot the giants, right? And you love it when you turn to the Word of God and the Word of God makes things super duper easy. Well, these passages are going to make things really easy, make it very easy to spot a giant, right? Our passages are one from the Old Testament, one from the New. It's from Exodus chapter 20, verse 12, and Ephesians chapter 6, verses 1 through 4. So Exodus 20, 12, Ephesians 6, verses 1 through 4. We can look at them right now. And they're very simple, right? Exodus 20, verse 12 reads as follows. Honor your father and mother so that you may live long in the land the Lord your God is giving you. Right? And Ephesians 6 is interesting because it's actually kind of a commentary on this passage. And interestingly enough, Paul writes this. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with a promise, so that it may go well with you and that you may enjoy long life in the earth. Fathers, do not exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord. So we have two passages we'll be working with today, and they make it very easy to spot a giant. Very, very easy to spot a giant. And what we'll be wrestling with as we look at these passages today is this, is that how do you say thank you to a giant, right? And neither one of these passages include the word gratitude or include the word thanks. But because of our season, we're kind of reasoning to these passages, right, from the standpoint of thanks and gratitude. How do you say thank you to a giant? Or if we put it differently, how do we say giant thank yous? How do we say giant thank yous? And we'll look at that, how to say thank you to giants. And they're going to say there's two steps to saying giant thank yous. There's two steps to saying giant thank yous. And we're going to look at those today. All right, so two steps to saying giant thank yous. Well, the first thing is to locate the giants, right? To locate the giants. You're up, you're winning an Academy Award, you're winning the Nobel Peace Prize, or you're just simply living your very, very normal existence, right? And you gotta locate the giants. If you're gonna say giant thank yous, you have to find the giant. You gotta find the giant first, right? Locate or find the giants, right? And the passages make it very easy. Again, Exodus 20, 12, honor your father and mother so that you may live long in the land the Lord your God has given you. Ephesians 6, 1 through 4, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with a promise, so that it may go well with you and that you may enjoy long life in the earth. Fathers, do not exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord. These passages make it very easy to find the giant. Obviously, the giant is parents, right? And by way of extension, you could extend that out because you could say grandparents, right? Or you could extend that out to say, you know, people who were really significant to you in your life, people who really poured into you and invested into you, you could include them, right? You could include them, that's fine. But the primary meaning, of course, is parents, right? And these two passages make it very easy to find the giant. And both of them really, I mean, you have Exodus 20, 12, and as I said, the Ephesians 6 part is really more of just, it's a commentary. He repeats the command, but he gives a little bit of commentary to it, right? And he fleshes it out just a little bit. But the centerpiece is Exodus 20, 12, which of course is one of the big 10, one of the 10 commandments. And you look at the structure of the 10 commandments, they're very easy. The first few commandments are all about your relationship to God. It's the vertical, right? And then the last six are about, they're the horizontal, our relationships to one another. This being one of them, our relationship to our parents, or you could say more specifically, past generations, generations that have come before. This would have been very important for the Hebrews just coming out of Egyptian slavery, because that's the context, right? They're at the foot of Mount Sinai, and they're still just getting to know God, right? These are Abraham's kids. God promised him, I'm going to give you a multitude of descendants that are so numerous that you look at the stars. You're not going to be able to count them. Well, this is they're the promise. It took like oodles of generations, and they were in Egyptian slavery for a very long time, right? For a few centuries, actually, which intensified gradually over time, and they became slaves to the Egyptians, who were incredibly harsh and who forgot that actually God blessed them through Joseph. We learned that, you know, there came a Pharaoh who knew not Joseph, right? And he utterly obliterated the Hebrews and then other people too who Egypt had conquered. It wasn't just the Hebrews or Abraham's kids. And part of what we learn in the Exodus narrative is things got the God kept blessing the Hebrew people and they kept having babies. And the Egyptians were afraid of them because they were like, whoa, okay, we enslaved these people and we're treating them like garbage. But yet, increasingly, there's becoming more of them than of us. And so they instructed Hebrews to kill their own kids. That's how Exodus opens. Remember that? That's how Exodus opens. Is the Egyptians are trying to get, especially two Hebrew women, to kill Hebrew boys. Right? Because you're thinking, One of these days, these people are going to become adults, and you want to take out the males because you want to take out the military force, right? And of course, these two lovely women say no, and they would not murder these little babies. But ultimately, the Egyptians did murder, you know, some of these kids anyway, right? And so here, it takes on a special meaning when God says, "Honor your mother and father." Because he's saying, hey, you need to honor people who brought you into this world at risk, right? At risk. People who brought you into this world, right, at the risk of their own lives. You honor mom and dad. Because the Egyptians were trying to get them to turn on each other as families, right? And so God is saying, hey, all that stuff you learned in Egypt, let me help you unlearn that right now. That's a lot of how the Ten Commandments function, actually, believe it or not. It's God trying to train his people and say, you've been in Egyptian slavery for quite a while. Let's unlearn some of this nonsense. Right? And it's a good lens to see the Ten Commandments through. And what we see in our commandment is a very simple command, honor mom and dad. Right? But very, very powerful and prescient for them. Because they would have come out of a context where the Egyptians were trying to get families turned on each other, even to the point of killing the babies. Right? I think we can relate to that in our own culture, but we just call it something different, don't we? So he says, here, honor your mother and father, so that you may live long in the land the Lord your God is giving you. Right? And so what's required of us? Why should we honor them? Like, well, he doesn't give any logic. He just says it, right? I mean, there's no commentary. I mean, all the Ten Commandments are very spare for the most part, right? They're pretty spare. He gives no rationale. He didn't say, you should honor mom and dad because, right? But there's some things I think we can infer from this. We can get some things from this. There's some stuff we know from our own lives. There's some things we know from Scripture about why we should honor mom and dad. We should honor mom and dad because they're giants who gave us life, right? They brought us into the world. I mean, yes, ultimately the Lord is the source of life, but the Lord brought us into the world through mom and dad. It's really simple, right? It's really simple, right? They gave us life. They brought us into the world. That alone is a good reason to honor mom and dad, right? Also, they provided for us. provided for us. Basic necessities, right? Food, clothing, shelter. They gave us these things. This is mom and dad, right, doing that for us. They raised us, right? Taught us right from wrong, taught us basics, right? How to make our way in the world, right? How you drive a car, how do you pay your bills? Why should you do taxes? Right? All these kind of these mechanics of life, the stuff you need to get on in life. Right? How do you get a job? They raised us. And lastly, they loved us. They loved us. Right? They cared for us. Right? They cared for us. They showed us deep affection. They loved us. Mom and dad gave us life, they provided for us, they raised us, and they loved us. Now, you could stop here and say, for some of us, and for some people watching the live stream, you could say, not my mom and dad, right? Maybe your mom or your dad or both weren't firing on all cylinders for all of these. Maybe it's kind of a pick a mix, and you're like, yeah, 1 through 3, yeah, for the most part, but the last one, no way, right? Or maybe like, mom and dad love me, but I don't know about raising me the best. Right? It's true, right? For some of us, that's the case. Right? So you're like, why did God say that? I mean, God's wise. God knows that sometimes parents can be knuckleheads. Right? I've had more than my fair share of knucklehead moments. Right? God is speaking in the ideal. He's speaking about what should be. Right, so he's talking about parents at their best, right? He's not ignoring the complexity of situations. When God gives this command, God is wise. God knows that there are parents who don't fire on all cylinders in all ways that they should at all times, right? He knows that there's times where there's parents who have a rocky patch, right? He also knows that there are parents who, in the aggregate, are terrible, right? He knows that. He knows that this happens sometimes. That there are some ways in which parents can be terrible and not only just not fire on all cylinders, like be proactively awful. He knows it. God is speaking about parents at their best. Right here. This isn't God ignoring the complexity of your situation or my situation. He's not ignoring things like abuse, right, or anything like that. It's just about people at their best. Right, and at our best, even parents. Let's just say maybe parents aren't rock stars all the time. But let's just say this is a picture of adequacy, like you're just adequate, right? Yeah, there's this rock star, and there's rock star moments, and there's rock star parents out there. But let's just say that we're just shooting for adequate right now, right? Even adequate parenting, right? Giving life, adequate provision. Adequate raising of kids, adequate love, right? The bare bones of what someone needs and what one should do, right? Even all that involves sacrifice and risk. It's risky to bring a life into this world, right? I mean, I remember this. I remember when Alyssa and I had Coraline. Coraline's our oldest, first kid, right? And we did all the prep, and we were so cool, and we read all the books. Right, everything he told us to read, we're reading it and everything. It's like, yeah, we got this, right? And then she's born, and we're like, and they send you home. And we're like, wait, that's it? There's no probation period? Right, really, you're trusting me with this little life? Because you realize suddenly how inadequate you are. Because it's like, you know, it's yeah, all the books are great. They're cool. They're awesome. But like when they hand that baby to you and you have to go home and they're like, yeah, it's you and the kid now. Right? It's you and the kid. Whoa. Reality sets in suddenly. Right? Now, most of us are fine. Right, you're fine. Your brain gets all weird and fuzzy, and then you get out of the fog. It's like the parenting fog. You got to go through the fog. You can't avoid it. You just have to go through it. But you're going to get out of it, right? You're going to be fine, right? And most of us we've been fine. But which you realize over time, this is a lot of sacrifice and a lot of risk to simply be adequate. I'm not even talking rock star level, right? And because of that, we need to show gratitude, right? We need to locate the giants and say, yeah, mom was great. Yeah, there's all kinds of rocky patches and rough patches, and I contributed to some of those rocky patches and rough patches. Some of that was me. That wasn't just her. Yeah, dad and I, we had that weird patch for like 3 years, right? Between like, 11 and, and 14 years old, right? And it's like, yep, some of that was him and some of that was me, right? But we need to locate the giants. We stand on their shoulders. We stand on their shoulders, right? And if you want to extend that out to some grandparents, now I know for me, grandparents are a big part of my life. You want to extend that out to some other family members, extended family, go ahead. But those are the giants, right? And God says that we should honor them, and he attaches a promise to that, and we'll get to that a little later. Second step, last step. Okay, so we've located the giants. Now, how do we say giant thank yous? How do we say giant thank yous? You locate a giant, we stand on the shoulders of giants the way that Isaac Newton did. Okay, cool. So how do we say giant thank yous? How do we thank a giant? They say giant thank yous. Well, you honor the giants, right? The scripture's clear. Honor your father and mother so that you may live long in the land the Lord your God has given you. Ephesians, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for it's right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with the promise, so that it may go well with you and that you may enjoy long life in the earth. Fathers, do not exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord. How do you honor the giants? Well, a few things, right? A few points here. Well, first of all, we can say thank you, right? We can simply say thank you, right? I know for me, the older I get, the smarter my mom gets. And I've told her that. I remember talking to her on the phone one time, this is some years ago, and looking up and going, wow. I was like, Mom, I just want to tell you, you were really smart. Because, like, I see what you were doing when you said this. I see what you were doing when you said that. Thank you very much. Right? And she did it by herself. Right? She did it by herself. Just thank you. Right? People who come before us, they need to hear it, right? Because parents, we don't always get things right, obviously, right? And sometimes the fact that we did not get things right, it actually weighs on us, right? I live with the thought of there's a conflict between me and like one of my kids, or like, all of my kids. And I'm like, oh dear, this is the moment. This is the moment. They'll be 25 years old. They're going to be in therapy. And they will reference this is it. This is when I broke the kid. Right here, right? I've had this thought too many times. And so sometimes we have a deep understanding of when we messed up. And so it's good to have kids say, hey, thanks. Because it's a way of feeling like, hey, you got something right. And people and parents need to hear that, right? People need to hear that. We need to say thank you. Right, and we also need to say thank you because it's sacrifice and risk that's gone into all that raising, all that provision, all that love, all that support. We need to say thank you. We need to say thank you. We could also thank God for them. Right, thank God for them. Specifically, that's important for those of us whose parents have gone on before us, parents who passed away. Right, and you say, why do I can't thank my mom, can't thank my dad right now because they're not here anymore. But we can thank God for them. We can go before the Lord and thank God and say, God, thank you. Thank you for putting me in this family. Thank you for blessing me with this mother or this father or both. Thank you for my granddad. Thank you for my grandmother. Right? You can think of specific instances. I'm thankful for my grandparents that after my parents divorced and my dad was kind of out of the picture, that they took us in, right? And so my really young memories were, some of my best memories were growing up in my grandmother's house, right? And it didn't hurt that she ran a candy store out of her house. Yes. Oh my, winning. Just, I love to win. Oh, I won as a child. But thank God for them, right? You thank God for them. Because solid parents are a blessing from God. They're a blessing, right? For those of us whose parents are still around, grandparents are still around, or other people who God has given you and influenced you and they caused you to flourish, bless them. Find a way to bless them. Find a way to be a blessing to them. Bless them, right? If that's doable for you, bless them. Practically bless them, right? Right. Find ways to actually be a blessing to them, to kind of return it. They blessed you, bless them. Why not? Right? Why not? If that's doable for you, bless them. Right? Also, listen to them. Listen to them, right? In Exodus 20, it says, honor your mother and father. Paul leads out with children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. And then he quotes Exodus, honor your father and mother. Right? Listen to them, and you could also add to that, obey them. Parenting is like time travel. It's like time travel. All parents have been to a future that their children have not been to yet. Right? All parents have been to a future that the kids have not been to yet. Right? You're always older than your kids. Doesn't matter when you had kids, you're always older than your kids. It's just how life works. It's how humans work. Right? So parenting is like time travel. All parents have been to a future their children have not been to yet, and their children are, in some very general sense, are headed towards. Right? Parenting is like time travel. You've been to the future. Right? So for those parents that whoever, you know, your kid's giving you trouble, you say, why should I listen to you? It's like, because I've been to the future. Right? Man, that would like really blow your kid's mind. Like, really? How'd you get there? What was it like? Right? Are there jetpacks? Parenting's like time travel. Parents have been to a future that their children are headed towards, right? Granted, it's not your kid's exact future, but there's just the thing about human beings. We work a certain way, right? We mature in a certain way in certain stages. There's certain things that are expected of us in those stages for all of us. It's hardwired into the machinery. God, our creator, made us a certain way to do certain things at certain points in times. So we have a lot of commonality in terms of how we are going to head into the future together. Parents have been there. Kids have not. Right? There's a been there, done that to parenting. I've been there and done that, so let me show you how to get there and do that. So therefore, children should listen to their parents. And that means even for those of us whose parents aren't here anymore, we can still listen, right? We can still listen. I'd say especially if your parents were saved and knew Jesus and when they passed away, you said, oh, I know where mom is. I know where dad is. Let me tell you something, that's people listen to. If you're pretty sure that they're with Jesus right now, I wanna listen. If that's folks who I'm pretty sure heard, well done, good and faithful servant, when they stood before the Lord, let me tell you, that's a person I want to listen to. You have something to say to me. Because you're somewhere I want to be. See that? So for some of us, it's like, look, you know, if your parents shared the gospel with you, right, and you're having trouble believing that gospel right now, but you know mom and dad are with Jesus, hey, there's somewhere you want to be. Pay attention. Right? Last two, build on a parent's good legacy, right? Build on a parent's good legacy. Take the good that they invested into you into the future. Build on it, make it better. Make good better, right? Make good better. Build on a good legacy. If anything good, right? Anything good that your parents or anyone else sowed into you from a previous generation, take that good, make it better, take it into the future, right? Bless others. And the last one too, a way to be thank, to live a, to say giant thank yous, honor the giants, forgive them. Forgive them. Parents screw up sometimes. And sometimes things aren't screw ups. Sometimes parents have catastrophic failures. Right? And by the power of the Lord, forgive them. Especially for those parents who you cannot honor. There are parents who are frankly so terrible that you don't know how to honor them. I mean, that's just real. Right? I'm not God. I don't know the numbers on that. I don't know in the human family how many times it happens, what the percentages are. God knows that kind of stuff. I'm not him. But I'm a pastor. I've been pastoring now for 25 years in one capacity or another, right? From college ministry to obviously to local church ministry. I know that there are parents who are dishonorable. I wish I did not know that. So what do you do? How do you obey this? Right? One thing you can do is to forgive them. Right? That is one thing you can do. That is a tough ask because I don't know your situation if that's you. Right? I don't know. So that I know that it's easy for someone like me to just like get up here on a Sunday morning and say stuff and I don't know your life. Right? I get it. And I know forgiveness can be hard. I've been, you know, wronged in some significant ways before, and forgiveness took me years. And so I won't begrudge you that. If it takes you years, cool. Just start the journey. Right? Because God knows. God knows that there are hurts out there that simply are going to take a long time. God is not unwise. He is most wise. He's also very patient. And it means he's also patient towards us when we have people to forgive who've basically done deep, hurtful things to us. And the closer they are, the more they hurt. So if it's mom and dad, yikes, it hurts, right? It hurts even more. And God is patient, and God knows that that takes a while. So don't hear me saying, right now, get it done, Jesus said. I'm saying start that journey, right, if that's you. Right, for the dishonorable parents, you can forgive. Right, you can forgive. And for these last two, because of where we are culturally, I want to take a little time out to camp out just a bit on building on a parent's good legacy and forgiving them. And I want to branch out just a little bit more to end our time to talk about previous generations. Right, remember what I said earlier. That in our cultural moment, we live in a culture that strips the past of virtue because we think we have nothing to learn from it, right? Other than the notion that the past was all terrible and we can do better now because we are so much, so vastly superior to the way they were then. We look to the past for grievances to make present day victims, right? I think the last two can be very instructive, right? In terms of how we look to the past in general, right? What do we do with bad parents? What do we do with bad national figures? What do we do with bad Christians from church history? Right? You read enough church history and you're going to run into them and you will run into them very quickly, right? Well, we've already said for parents who were dishonorable, forgive. Even if it takes a long time, forgive. For national figures and terrible Christians who are removed from us, because those aren't our parents in the sense of anybody who we're biologically related to, right? But they are people who, they're in our country's heritage, right? So we have some kind of relationship to them because who we are within our nation is kind of built upon who they were, right? And then also, in church history, we got some bad Christians, and so we're related to them in a way by the blood of Jesus, right? In God's forever family. What do we do with these people? What do we do with these people? Well, those last two, I think, are important. I think number one is building on the good legacy of people who've come before us on the national stage or in church history. Build on good legacies and make good better, right? I think about I mean, in our just the last few years, what happened in 2020, right? After George Floyd was killed, right? Everybody and their mom ran around toppling monuments, right? Everybody ran around toppling monuments. Just, you know, oh, you know, there's a guy. He fought in the wrong side in Civil War. Smash. That guy owned slaves. Smash. Right? This person did this. This person did it. Smash. Let's rename this school. Smash. Right? Okay. Okay. But the question, I think it's a better question to be asking. Is history that simple? Is life that simple? Can we just reduce everybody to their blooper reel? Right? I mean, if people reduce me to my blooper reel, you could look at Myron Crockett and say, smash. Right? Or is it more wise to take like a bigger view of someone's life and to say, okay, this part of their life, craptacular. Right? But here's some awesome stuff over here that I still live with right now. Thomas Jefferson owned slaves. Yes, he did. And some other things too. Right? All right, smash. Let's rename anything named after Thomas Jefferson. Let's go tear down the monument. Yeah! Right? He's also brilliant and an architect of our nation. And the fact that you enjoy the freedoms you enjoy in the United States of America is greatly attributable to him. What do you do? Well, number one is don't be an infant. Don't be an infant and just say, smash. It's like the Incredible Hulk, right? Like, what does the Hulk do? What's his whole thing? Hulk smash, right? Now, you can forgive the Hulk because, like, you know, the Hulk is usually a normal-looking dude. And then, like, you know, he gets angry and smash, right? We can't be like that. You can't be like that and, like, exist in civilization. You can't be like that and have a civilization. If that's the case, you got to burn everything and everybody down right now. You may as well nuke the earth. Right? That's not how life works. Right? What we can do with a figure like Thomas Jefferson is say, whoa, glaring darkness over here. Let's not do that. Take the good that he did, make it better. And over time, you take that into the future that outshines all the terrible things. Right? It's how you live in tension with people. And you gotta live in tension, because life's not easy. And people are complicated. The most complicated thing God ever made is a human. Right? And we better show that mercy to people in the past, because we're gonna want people to show us that mercy in the present. Right? And there's a shortness of mercy right now in our culture. Right? Same thing in church history. George Whitefield, one of the greatest evangelists that the church has ever seen, led oodles and oodles of people to Jesus, right? Great revivalist / evangelist, right? Worked with John Wesley even, right? At the same time, enthusiastic slave trader. Enthusiastic. Like, he wasn't just like, this is kind of weird. I don't know. It's kind of shady. Now, he was like, yeah, what do you do with that, right? Rip down everything named after him, burn his books. That'll show him. He's dead. Or take what's good, denounce what's terrible, don't repeat what's terrible, and take what's good, build, make it better, build into the future. See that? That's, by the way, more biblical. That's how God, the living God, who has the right to judge everybody in a very black and white way, that's how God deals with people. Right? That's why, by the way, when you read the book of Hebrews, in the chapter 11, there's what we call the Faith Hall of Fame. And it just lists a bunch of awesome people who came before. Yeah, you see a bunch of awesome people came before, and there's some people you look at and you're like, wait, what? He made it in? That, what, really, Samson? Bruh. Dude was a dumpster fire. It's like, you're like looking at Hebrews going, did you read Judges? Yikes. But there he is. And you're like, no way. Now, part of that's right, because it's like you read Judges and you're going, oh, come on, man. It's complicated. All right? And if we want mercy for ourselves in the present, we better be really careful about how we look at the past. Because we're told by Jesus Christ himself that you show those who are merciful will be shown mercy. And there's a shortness of mercy right now. And it masquerades under the name of justice. And I don't know about you, but I don't want justice without mercy. I don't want it for anybody else, and I certainly don't want it for me. Right. Friends, locate and honor giants right now, because people are tearing the statues down. Locate and honor giants because people are tearing their families down. Right? Locate and honor the giants and learn to say giant-sized thank yous. Right? And even when we can't honor the giants, because the giants were dishonorable and didn't do what they should have done and didn't live the way they should have lived, and they failed to live up to even God's expectations for them, learn to forgive. Learn to forgive, right? Because all of this, because it's a command that comes with a promise, right? It's a promise about our future, that our futures will go well, that so that we may live long in the land the Lord your God has given you. Paul interprets it so that it may go well with you, that you may enjoy long life in the earth, right? How we treat the giants whose shoulders we stand upon dictates how we go into the future. It is the only commandment among the Ten Commandments with a promise about our futures. So know that the way in which we look at the past, whether it's through a heart of gratitude or through a heart of ingratitude, you're laying the foundation for your future. Choose wisely. And learn to say thank you. Amen? Praise God.